broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for March 8th in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to promote God, family, and country, to protect life, liberty, and property, to do so using the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America, to return the Republic to its former glory by obedience to the principles of God, family, and country. And ladies and gentlemen, by the consent of the governed, they derive their just power. When they take power that is not delegated and separated by the consent of the governed, they're out of line and lawless. Let's be very, very crystal clear on that point. By the way, last hour we had on Lowell Nelson, and the reason I bring this up is because he attended a meeting Friday night with a Caleb Warnock. Now, Caleb, by the way, is a dear friend of mine. But Caleb Warnock spoke at the Highland, Utah meeting last Friday. Not only did he provide an excellent gardening series of tips, but it's the best comedy Lowell's heard in years. Anyway, you know what? Caleb is just super talented. He really, really is. SeedRenaissance.com is the website. Dr. Bradley's with me, and I emailed the details to you, Scott, so you can get it out to the people that want you to communicate with them and that listen to your webinars and a whole lot more. But it's just simply Seed, S-E-D, Renaissance. So there's two E's, S-E-E-D, and then Renaissance, R-E-N-A-I-S-S. S-S-A-N-C-E, SeedRenaissance.com, just like it sounds. And Caleb Warnock collects and sells some of the rarest and some of the most important seeds in the world. He specializes in year-round self-sufficient gardening for all climates. I'm telling you, the guy knows absolutely what he's talking about. He brings the pioneer days forward in a way that is just incredible. He single-handedly could be the guy that makes it so we can all eat. I kid you not. Just put two words together, seedrenaissance.com, and you got it. And Scott, I emailed you those details as well. I wanted to take a minute to kind of drill into that because I know people are very interested in the work from Caleb Warnock, and he's written a bunch of books. He's a terrific writer. He used to write for the Daily Herald. I think he's got too busy and he doesn't have time for that now. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a while. But nevertheless, the guy's just tremendous in every way. Dr. Bradley, welcome, sir.
Well, thank you. You know, it's interesting that it generated enough interest that, people that knew I was going to be on during your second hour but texted me and said, hey, see if you get the details. You know, they weren't able to write it down, but it is interesting in this world of genetically modified everything and completed of where we're going with human beings and this mRNA COVID nonsense, as you know, and the pesticides and the uptake that they have of things, chemicals that literally are probably causing a whole plethora of health issues. This idea of being able to have, heritage type seeds that will grow, the old fashioned way, if you will, without the, what they've done with a lot of the seeds and their chemical treatments of soils is they do it for commercialization. They want things to grow fast. They want them to look pretty. And they want to, have a certain appearance and everything, but the nutritional value is virtually, well, I can't say zero, but it's approaching that in some instances because
it has seriously lost a lot of its mojo, that's for sure. And you can see it in the health of the people.
Well, I think, honestly, along with the vaccine damage things that are happening with the plethora of autoimmune system problems, the things like autism, cancer, and I mean, it's a whole spectrum of things that didn't seem to really be around. I mean, diabetes, things that kill the kidneys, kill the pancreas, and it's like, holy cow, why has there been just an avalanche of things since the introduction of the world in which pharma is basically held harmless for all of their egregious efforts to make tons of money, And the people are being shoehorned into a situation that really is destroying their health. So, yeah, I think stuff like this and heritage seeds may not be the whole solution to everything, but certainly, you know, the chemicals and the pharma and all those kind of other things have got to be considered in what just seems like, as I said, an avalanche of health issues that just didn't exist when I was young. I mean, when I was young, it was a far different world. I mean, even wheat. Wheat was an ancient type wheat when I was young, and my wife's grandfather was a large wheat farmer. And the wheat today is a vastly different wheat than it was in the old days. And, you know, this idea of wheat is for man has almost become a lost aphorism, because some of the grains and so on that are being grown and how they harvest them, you know, how they use chemicals to kill them in a, you know, in a almost an instantaneous way, so everything, you know, dries out at the same rate so you can harvest them faster, but it leaves the chemicals on them to be put into our foodstuffs. I mean, the whole cycle of things has become so chemicalized and industrialized that the old solid substantive, you know, food standbys have gone by the way. And another thing that's interesting, I know we maybe ought to get off this topic quickly, but I am astonished as I've done research on some of these food charts that are put out about you need to have so many, you know, helpings of this every day and so many of that. They're written by lobbyists. That those aren't nutritionally established unless somebody's paid for a study that came to that conclusion. You know, this idea of you got, you know, you've seen probably, well, maybe when you were young it wasn't this way, Sam, but I'm telling you, I remember the triangles that they'd put up, and you got to have so many of this and so many of that, so many of this.
They had the four food groups with the pyramids when I was a kid, right?
Right, and the thing is, those were written by basically lobbyists, and again, if there are quote-unquote studies that indicate the importance of these things, they were bought and paid for studies. And I've spent enough time in the university world to know that the people paying for the study were the ones that were, they had a preconceived outcome they were looking for. I'm not just talking about, you know, in food and stuff like that. I'll give you an example. One time I had been speaking about the idea of creating special classes of people based upon sexual preference and how that violated every principle that anybody ever had thought of. And I got contacted by a research scientist that was studying the HIV/AIDS. And he was very well endowed in terms of financial support from the lobby that was pushing HIV/AIDS kind of ascendancy, if you will, and the groups of people that were behind that. And so he received a great deal of funding from that. And he contacted me on the phone and asked me if he could meet me one time. And it was in a university setting. And he picked a place. He says, here's the location I'd like to meet you. It was in an alley. It wasn't a dark alley. It was during the day. But it was an alleyway between two buildings. There were no windows or doorways in that alleyway, that there was just solid walls on both sides of us. And he says, I asked to meet you here. He says, because what I'm going to tell you, I can't have anybody over here. He said, that would absolutely destroy my livelihood. He said, I would no more receive any more grants or contracts in this field because it is very agendized. But he told me, because there had been questions about whether or not there was a genetic link to same-sex attraction. And he said in all the years of research that he had done, and he was a PhD scientist that was a lead kind of investigator on these kinds of things, he told me that in all the years he had done, he says, I can absolutely unequivocally state there is not a genetic link between same-sex attraction, he says. So the idea that somehow this could be linked to a civil rights issue, like, you know, you don't pick what color you are, and so maybe this could be something that would be rolled into the, you know, the Civil Rights Act stuff. And by the way, we could talk about that at some length, too, probably because of what's been happening in the Congress. But at any rate, he says, I mean, because I was very excited. I said, will you come speak with me about these issues? I can't. I would destroy my complete livelihood. But that's the way things are done. The researchers get the money, and they have a preconceived notion about what's going to come out. I talked to one PhD. I asked him in his research if he found anomalies in his research that did not reinforce the perceived outcome they were looking for. I says, what do you do with those? And he says, I discard them. It's like, I says, isn't that dishonest to the core? He says, but that's not the information or the outcome we're looking for. So a lot of these things that happen are absolutely, they're manipulated. And
not only is it the perceived outcome that they push for, ladies and gentlemen, but it's intentionally manipulated so you don't know the truth. And the same-sex attraction thing, you know, proves the point. They push narratives that they know are false. It's not just that they want the outcome to peddle something for money. It's about control and about absolute, complete fake news propaganda. Okay, so he knows full well that there's no single link to this same-sex attraction, genetically speaking. But yet they push the envelope that, hey, this may not be a choice that people could choose. This may be something beyond their control. They're genetically born with it. They know that that's a blatantly false reality they're peddling. They know it full well. And what it really does is strikes at the heart of your agency, your ability to choose. And they have allowed the media to not only propagandize the lie that it's not really a choice, but then to propagandize the acceptance of these behaviors as if we're animals and have no choice or control. Let's finish up on that, and then I want to talk about the big $1.9 trillion bill that just got passed.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
With news the networks refuse to use. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, his website is freedomsrisingsun.com. He's Dr. Scott Bradley, and he's with me on your radio. We're talking about same-sex attraction, and they play games with words to illustrate and to promote their, in my opinion, erroneous conclusions based on a control-style agenda. They say the new study published in the journal Science, listen, is not the first to explore the link between genetics and same-sex behavior. Then they say this, no gay gene, but genetics linked to same-sex behavior. Okay, that's the headline. All right. But then they go on, if you read a little further, they say, but we can't predict same-sex attraction. So what they want to say is no single gene, You can turn it off, turn it off, makes you gay or whatever else. No gay gene. But yet a series of genes and the changes in those genetic patterns do denote same-sex attraction. But then they say, but we can't predict it. So how educated am I? What are they really saying? And the answer is they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're trying to make you believe with their headlines manipulated things. And then when the science really backs it up, they don't know. They see a difference in patterns, but we don't know what that different patterns really are associated with. They assume it's the same-sex attraction, but they can't prove it and they can't predict it, doctor. And that's why they're dishonest in their delivery, to say the least.
Well, like I say, they're paid to deliver a message. And like I say, if you throw out data that is opposite of what you're looking for, and I could give you many, many examples from conversations of numerous, I mean, these are world-class, highly renowned, full professor, world, you know, kind of class kind of people on a whole plethora of subjects, whether it's global warming or it's about nutrition or it's about same-sex attraction or it's about gender and leadership or snakes. I mean, that sounds like a funny thing to throw in the end, but I know of a tragic story because of something that happened because a court testimony was bought and paid for by a state that wanted to convict somebody based upon what I know from personal conversation. This highly renowned, very expert individual he lied through his teeth to get, because the state had paid him to bring a certain testimony to the courtroom. I mean, these kinds of things happen all the time. And you know, that's what's a kind of a problem in the whole system we've got right now. And we could look at the criminal justice system, for example, which I've talked before on your program, how, if anything, the American Founding Fathers biased the criminal justice system in favor of the accused, because they did not ever want an innocent individual to suffer for something they hadn't committed. And what's happened now is that the justice is not being served, and that was one of the reasons for the American Revolution, was that justice was not found in the system that they had, because there was a lot of issues of the way it was carried out arbitrarily by the king's officers, if you will. All of these things, and we can go back even to the Declaration of Independence and read about these things, but the idea of justice being available to people in the American system was something they sought for through the government that they established under the American Founding Fathers, and that justice or the truth being exposed is becoming more questionable all the time because the way things are biased nowadays. And I just think it's a tragic travesty how people manipulate. I'll just give you a couple of real quick examples. There's no in the Humanist Manifesto, there is a statement that says ethics is situational and autonomous. That means ethics is based upon the situation you're in, and autonomous means it's a standalone decision. You can't have firm This applies across the board kind of concepts. And without going into a whole lot of detail about a conversation I had with some young students at one point, about they were in a very, very kind of, you know, high class, if you will, prep school that was preparing them for the Ivy League schools. And I was told flat out that every single day, every single one of them cheated to get high grades on whether it's their classes they were taking or their standardized tests or whatever. And I asked one girl outright, she was talking about these others that cheated. I says, do you cheat? She says, absolutely. I says, why? She says, because you can't compete unless you do. And so here were these, the best of the best, if you will, that were to be the leaders, if you will, you know, the ones that are in the Wall Street attorneys and the politicians or whatever, you pick whatever they're grooming them for, and they cheated their way through school because they felt like that was necessary in order to succeed. But that's based upon the humanist education system, situation, ethics, autonomous and situational. You cannot say, you know, truth is truth anymore to these people.
Well,
and so
and the,
that's
the,
what we're
the problem with all these things, Dr. Bradley, is there are or is, depending on, you know, a grain of truth to situational ethics. And let me explain so that you get it. There is a moral imperative priority that we must all go through when making decisions. Okay? And sometimes you're in a rock and a hard place, and there are decisions that you have to make to come out on the other side with a moral high ground. And so there are some situational ethics that do apply when you look at God's laws. The problem is it runs off the rails when you have a motive that makes you lose the moral high ground. In other words, I have to cheat to compete. You've lost the moral high ground. You don't need to cheat to compete. You might say you do, but what you need to do from a moral imperative is say, hey, I'm going to expose this fraud that everybody's cheating. That's above the need to cheat to compete kind of an idea. And I'll give you an example. If you're out in the middle of the ocean and you've got 2 5-year-old kids on one end of a plank and a 15-year-old kid on the other end of the plank, and the second you move, somebody hits the water. But you can't stay there forever because you're going to starve, right? What do you do? Who do you save? How do you go about solutions? And the moral imperatives, there are a prioritization of moral realities that you've got to do, right? Number one, if I'm out in the middle of the ocean like that, first off, I don't know who I'd save. I don't even know if I could save myself. So the first thing I personally would do would be to turn to God and say, you know what? There's got to be something outside of the scope of my options that I see here in a mortal frame, a mortal state of mind. There's got to be a better saving answer than I've got in front of me. Lord, help me discover it quickly, please. And turn to God Almighty for guidance and direction and safety. And then going about what I do for solutions, I would have to take some chances. But my goal would always be the most preservation of life for me. And I would like to save all three of them, the two on one end and the one on the other end. And myself, I'd like to save all four of us. Will I be able to? I don't know. I'm going to have to take some chances, but I'm going to strategically take chances based on this hierarchy of morals that we do. So here's the problem. There is some truth to this relative moral discussion when you're in the rock and a hard place. The question is, do you use a moral compass of governing values to decide this based on God's laws, or do you toss it to the wind and say, because that exists in reality in a very limited scope, that I can exploit that for my own purposes and say it's relative across the board? So God's laws are solid across the board with few exceptions. The relativism folks say, hey, it's just situational. Whenever I want to exploit it for whatever purposes I want to, with an immoral compass at the helm, I can do. Your thoughts, Doctor?
Well, let me just read a few lines out of Thomas Jefferson's letter to his nephew, Peter Carr, back in 1785. I give this to all young people that I teach. In fact, I've got a group of young people right now I'm doing a 12-week course with, but I just gave them this letter last week. It says, this is just a little segment out of it. Whenever you do a thing, although it can never be known but to yourself, ask yourself how you would act were all the world looking at you, and act accordingly. Encourage all your virtuous dispositions and exercise them whenever an opportunity arises, being assured that they will gain strength by exercise as the limb of the body does, and that exercise will make them habitual. From the practice of the purest virtue, you may be assured you will derive the most sublime comforts in every moment of life and in the moment of death. If you find yourself environed with difficulties and perplexing circumstances out of which you are at a loss how to extricate yourself, do what is right, and be assured that that will extricate you the best out of the worst situations. Though you cannot see when you take one step what will be the next, yet follow truth, justice, and plain dealing, and never fear their leading you out of the labyrinth in the easiest manner possible. The knot which you thought a Gordian one will untie itself before you. Nothing is so mistaken as the supposition that a person is to extricate himself from a difficult...
Hang tight, everybody around the table live.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Two more women came forward over the weekend claiming the Democrat governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, of sexual improprieties. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on Sunday said he backed an investigation into sexual harassment allegations against Governor Andrew Cuomo made by five women, most of them former aides. The U.S. House of Representatives is set to vote on Wednesday on a pair of bills to expand background checks before gun purchases, 2 years after a similar House effort failed to make it through the Senate. Mackenzie Scott, philanthropist, author, and former wife of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, has married Dan Jewett, a Seattle science teacher who expressed gratitude for the exceptional privilege it will be to partner in giving away money with the potential to do so much good when shared. A Chinese-approved COVID-19 vaccine has led to two people dying and two people in ICU after 83,400 people received the Sinovac vaccine in Hong Kong. USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
The product that you have given me here is, as far as I'm concerned, sent to me from heaven. I love it a great deal. It's hard to find anything that's real nowadays. I enjoy it immensely. It's making my life so much better. I feel so much better. And during this pandemic, I have no worries whatsoever. My immune system has got to be at a top-notch level. I don't seem to get colds or anything. I don't know what getting sick is anymore. This is so cool.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code USA.
George Floyd jury selection begins Monday. Jeremy Scott from the Oregon USA Radio News Bureau reports.
Derek Chauvin is charged with murder and manslaughter in Floyd's death last May.
George Floyd's family, as the victims who I represent, have been informed that they have every intention of the trial going forward.
The Floyd family's attorney, Ben Crum, tells CBS's Face the Nation it's his hope that police reform is part of President Joe Biden's legacy.
We need systematic change and reform in policing, and I know millions of black people went out and voted with George Floyd and Breonna on their mind.
Government buildings in downtown Minneapolis are fenced off in anticipation of possible demonstrations. Some businesses have boarded up or closed. Floyd died after Chauvin kneeled on his neck for several minutes as he repeated, "I can't breathe."
Chauvin's defense team claims Mr. Floyd died of a drug overdose from drugs he was hiding in his mouth when arrested. USA Radio News.
We're discussing how to make decisions, ladies and gentlemen, and I agree we got to reject the complete relative idea that whatever you want to do for your own selfish best interests makes sense. I reject that relativism idea completely. However, I will say that there is a hierarchy, if you will, of moral imperative that's worthy of discussion. And what happens is, just like capitalism is a wonderful thing, naked capitalism, where there's no morals involved, is a horrible thing. It's taken to the extreme. Same with this discussion. There are moral imperatives. There are circumstantial differences. For example, you know what? Thou shalt not kill is a commandment. But if you're in a war scenario, forced by your country to go to war, and you end up in your effort to preserve life, you take someone's life, have you murdered? Is it the same? Is intentionally murdering somebody for gain? Okay, so there are moral imperatives that relate. There are a hierarchy. Or there is a hierarchy of moral realities that we must deal with. And so Dr. Scott Bradley giving us a quote. It was from Thomas Jefferson, you said?
That's correct. Just a few more lines. But people need to understand that we have probably a lot more solid ground to operate off of than we do gray ground. Far too often people throw themselves into a gray ground. And for example, in your war scenario, and I'll finish the quote, it's just got a few more lines, but the war ground, I truly believe that God holds accountable those that are responsible for the war and those that are the participants. If they're not being some you know, if you're acting like Joseph Goebbels or Adolf Eichmann or somebody, and all you do is follow orders, but it leads to the mass murders of people, you've got to have some moral integrity on those kind of things. And you can't say, oh, I was just following orders. Nuremberg trial said that was not the case. But if you're in a combat kind of situation, I truly believe those that are responsible for the war are those that will be called into account by God. And there is times that you're compelled, you know, to arms. But the fact is, most of the time, the things that most of us face, almost all the times in our lives, these moral imperatives are pretty clear cut, I think. But going on with just the few more lines of Jefferson, nothing is so mistaken as the supposition that a person is to extricate himself from a difficulty by intrigue, by chicanery, by dissimulation, by trimming, by an untruth, by an injustice. This increases the difficulties tenfold, and those who pursue these methods get themselves so involved at length that they can turn no way, but their infamy becomes more exposed. It is of great importance to set a resolution not to be shaken, never to tell an untruth. There is no vice so mean, so pitiful, so contemptible, and he who permits himself to tell a lie once finds it much easier to do it a second time and a third time till at length it becomes habitual. He tells lies without attending to it, and truths without the world's believing him. This falsehood of the tongue leads to that of the heart, and in time depraves all of its good dispositions. So anyway, that's just a little segment of this letter that Thomas Jefferson sent to his nephew. But there's a whole bunch of other great advice and counsel in it too. But that had to do, I think, with this idea of integrity. And I think that most of us in most of our daily dealings in today's world would find the path a lot more straightforward and simple were we to follow that counsel. Now, again, there's hard cases, and it's kind of like hard cases make bad law. I mean, if you look at legislature that tries to create a law that deals only with the really, really, really strange and weird and bizarre cases, the law is usually pretty perverse and convoluted. But in most of our daily dealings, I think that this concept that Jefferson was promoting really does hold sway. And I don't know. I think people are a lot happier when they don't have to worry who's going to discover their next lie.
I agree with that completely. What do you think of my assertion, though, that there is a relative discussion sometimes that must take place based on a hierarchy of morals?
Well, I believe absolutely is the case. I could give you some examples that would probably bear out where you're going with this thing. I know of a case one time where there were some pioneers that were traveling by wagon train, and they were surrounded by Native Americans, and they wanted two of the immigrants' numbers to put to death as a payment for two of their braves that had been killed in another encounter with another wagon train. And they were either going to surround them and kill them all, or just give us two and we'll take those two. And then you can go on your way. Well, the leader of that wagon train said, we're not going to sacrifice any of our people. We'll take whatever comes out of this, but we are not going to turn people over to be murdered for something they're not guilty of. And they went forward, and in this particular case that I know of, there was a successful and happy ending. But the fact of the matter is, they would have had an easy way out, perhaps, and say, look, there's 100 of us in this thing. That's 2%. It's a pretty good deal. Let's give them over and let's move on. But the individual had enough integrity, and it really came down, and his words to the people were trusting in God. They were going to put their whole, you know, continued success and existence in the hands of God and act in faith, rather than take this easy way out of, okay, we could give a couple of percent of our people away and we'd be okay, you know? And so, yeah, those kinds of things, I think faith enters into many of the decisions we need to take, and we need to use them based upon the foundational principles that are found in God's Word, the Scriptures. So anyway, I think you're right that you might say you're faced with vexing problems, but very often, I think if we have integrity and want to find a good solution for them, those solutions are more easily found than people are, you know, willing to admit nowadays.
There's no doubt about that. And it's also important to teach this principle because, look, what they want to say is, hey, everything is relative. You can do whatever you want for your own personal gain or whatever else. Hey, take advantage of somebody because of their words. Do all these things. Relativism requires it if it makes sense to you. That's the lie. But what they're doing is exposing some truths in their lie. The truth is there are a hierarchy of moral decisions and a way to go about thinking through things. There are governing values that should govern our actions and our thoughts and our behaviors. It's the exploitation of that where these relativists, but people who are into revising history based on these relative discussions as well. So they're revisionists, relativists, kind of a thing. They lie, and they exploit what is good, honorable, and right, and good, and take it to the extreme. And that's where people need to understand the difference. All the time, biblically, there are decisions that need to be made that oftentimes are very tough. You know, what do you do if you're Esther? Do you shut up and be the king's wife? Or do you stand up at great, great possible peril to yourself and everyone around you? Okay, there are, and the point is, she went about it in a very appropriate, organizing these morals based on this hierarchy that I'm explaining. And she went about it, and she first went to God and put her faith in God. Okay, we need to learn these principles. We need to learn how to apply them. We need to understand that they're true. So capitalism is not bad, but naked capitalism, the exploitation with no morals, is. Okay, same thing with this discussion about these morals and how to think through them and go about them. And governing values are key here, Doctor.
Well, indeed they are. And maybe that brings back to something you brought up near the beginning of our discussion that might bring it more on track with what you were trying to do today, this $1.9 trillion COVID so-called relief fund that is a complete absurdity. It completely violates all baseline principles. There is no authority to do what's being done in this. And literally and truthfully, they have perverted every justifiable direction that they could go on this thing. And it's become a goodie box that's, $2 trillion. I mean, a trillion's a thousand billion, a billion's a thousand million. So it's a million, to get to this trillion for one. And honestly, as a people, that we are being so perverted in this thing, and nobody seems to even think about, not just the debt, but the principle that says you can or cannot do what they're doing. I mean, here's a nation that has a source of about $3.5 trillion revenue every year. On a regular year, we spend about $4.5, and then it's just completely bizarre. And they're shoveling money out that our grandkids are being put on the hook for. And again, they'll never pay for it because, well, first of all, the Federal Reserve's creating the money out of thin air and loaning it to us at full value with interest, for crying out loud. And I don't know what our interest is this year, but let's say it's almost two-thirds of a trillion dollars, $600 billion. That's our interest. But on this new debt and everything like that, I mean, what if the interest rates go up? I mean, is there going to be any revenue left ultimately to operate on if you're a sixth of the way to using up all the revenue right now just on interest?
Hang tight, Dr. Bradley. Liberty Roundtable live in seconds on your radio.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Gentlemen, you got to ride like the wind, like Paul Revere, for the preservation of the greatest country on the face of the earth. I'm telling you that right now. It's up to every one of us. There are no political issues in the world, ladies and gentlemen. Let me say it again. There are no political issues in the world. They are all moral discussions, ladies and gentlemen. Morality is the key. Politics is a way to divide and deceive us. Ladies and gentlemen, we got lies and fake news to the core. I'll tell you that right now. But ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about a moral hierarchy based on God-given governing values. Let me say it again. You got a moral hierarchy, ladies and gentlemen, based on God-given governing values, and we need to prioritize things based on God's laws. When we do, we shall be faithful, we shall be protected, and we shall have the moral high ground. If we don't, ladies and gentlemen, we literally buy the farm, or whatever you want to call it. We're in serious trouble, ladies and gentlemen. The Senate passed Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID-19, what they call as a relief bill. See how it's a lie? It's not a relief for anybody. It's just basically putting your children into slavery with the debt of their fathers based on a lie. By the way, the House passed it 219 to 212. Not a single Republican voted for it. And in the Senate, ladies and gentlemen, it was 50 to 49. Kamala Harris cast the tie-breaking vote. Disaster on steroids, ladies and gentlemen. This is bad news, to say the least. It is literally legalized plunder. We're government stealing from the rich, giving to the poor, government Robin Hood on steroids. And the fact is, government has zero authority to do this. And it gets worse, and I'll tell you why. Listen carefully, and then we'll jump to Dr. Bradley on this. Democrats reject Republican attempts to prevent stimulus checks from going to prisoners. That's right. Now, it's bad that the checks go to prisoners, okay? And it's bad that the checks go to illegals, okay? It's horrible. But don't tell me that it's fine for a check to go to a citizen. That's the kind of the lie that's being told by the Republicans, fighting checks going to prisoners, but yet, hey, they're not really fighting checks going to everybody. You could say, well, they didn't vote for it, Sam. I know. I get it. They didn't vote for it, but they have set the stage over decades for socialism to be the order of the day. They set the stage by not standing up tall when they had control of the House, the Senate, the White House, and the courts. Ladies and gentlemen, the Republicans right now should sue and say there's no constitutional authority whatsoever for Congress to pass a law to redistribute wealth at the federal level when the United States government is in debt to the tune of who knows how many trillion dollars. On the books, $25 trillion. In reality, maybe more like $250 trillion. The numbers are staggering. The failure of our economy at some point, don't know when, is insured. And somebody needs to sue the government and say, we got to stop this. But nevertheless, what the Republicans are going to do is they're going to basically, in this relativism, say, well, by golly, we tried to stop the checks from going to the prisoners there. But it's a day late and a dollar short, to say the least, Doctor.
Well, here's the deal. They string at gnats and swallow camels. And let's take our home state of Utah, for example. They are feeding at the government trough in great gulps and accepting hundreds of millions of dollars that come in by this federal largesse that, again, as you point out, is totally unconstitutional. There is no authority to redistribute wealth found in the United States Constitution, and that's exactly what this is doing. But our state, our home state of Utah, continues in this emergency notation, which started, by the way, a year ago in March. So it's been a whole year now. They declared an emergency weeks before a single COVID death, COVID-related death, I should say, because I'm not sure that how many can be attributed solely to COVID. But there hadn't been a single COVID-related death in the state of Utah, and they declared a state of emergency, and that put them on the bandwagon of those that were going to be able to take full advantage of federal largesse as the federal government started shoveling money into the states. And that, I believe, is the sole and only reason that they've continued to keep this state of emergency in effect. The emergency could end tomorrow if they lost their greed. So here Utah is an overwhelmingly Republican-led state. I mean, they have supermajorities in everything. I mean, whether it's the judicial, the executive, or the legislative branch, they're completely in control of the state of Utah. And yet, they continue to foster this idea that send the money, we'll spend it wisely. And that's the COVID emergency would end in Utah, truly, if they said there's no more money for it.
But hold on. Oh, my goodness. Even if there is an emergency, set aside the money for a second, they don't have authority to take extreme action, even in an emergency, where basically legislative body said, hey, we're not going to count this emergency. And the governor says, don't care, doing it anyway. Okay, these are the checks and balances we're talking about. And not only are they not justified, but they're violating their oaths of office when they violate the checks and balances and take power unto themselves that they do not have based on the consent of the governed. So money is just a piece of the pie. It drives the exercise. I get it. But the moral imperative is to say, hey, from the governor, I'm in the wrong branch of government. I don't have authority. And for the legislative body to say, yeah, we have the right to legislate, but we don't have the right to legislate that which is immoral. Or that which takes from one and gives to another, or that which violates the Ten Commandments of Almighty God. These are the moral imperatives that I'm talking about in relation to this, Doctor.
Well, there's no question. And let's just use the state of Utah. I'm sure all of your listeners are in a state that have a similar kind of condition. But in the state of Utah, the legislature and the people can create law. There's some special circumstances under which the people can directly create law. But the executive branch is absolutely precluded from that. We have a continuity of government with emergencies that is there, and it does not allow anybody to violate the Constitution. These are all written into the Constitution, but what happened back in 2015, the legislature stupidly proposed and carried out unconstitutionally a delegation of authority to the executive to create law in the event there was an emergency.
Now let me stop you, though. When you say stupidly, I agree they did it stupidly, but they don't have any authority to do that. They should all be arrested who voted for it, every one of them.
They did not have authority. Constitutional protocol does not allow the redelegation of authority that was ratified by the people on a constitution they have given their consent to be governed under. And so the legislature gave that to the governor, and then in the spring of last year, they had some special sessions where the legislature further offended the Constitution and the people that had agreed to live and give their consent under the Constitution. But it continues based upon the fact that if we keep this emergency going, we'll continue to get many, 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 many millions of dollars from the national government, the general government, and everybody's willing to feed at the trough. And right now I'm looking at the U.S. national debt clock in real time, and it exceeds $28 trillion admitted debt. You know, when you look at the unfunded liabilities, it's many, many more trillion that we have basically completely ignored. I mean, it's unfunded. We've made commitments to pay money that we have no revenue stream for. And someday, somehow, it's all going to come to fruition, and your grandkids are going to say, Grandpa, what were you thinking? You know, by the way, going back to Jefferson, he had a hard, fast rule that if you had to go into debt, you know, government had to go into debt, it should be immediately there was a fund set aside that they collected funds to retire that. And the longest date out that he said was acceptable was 20 years, because that was considered like a generation of leadership. Okay, so if a leadership, accepted a debt for whatever reason, you could put that on a note that basically had a funding source that they set up at the same time they created the debt that would retire it within 20 years because it was immoral to pass it on to the next generation. That's how the founding fathers thought. And we just have abandoned that completely.
Because they understood God's laws of a moral hierarchy. It's a moral imperative to stick to your governing values. And if you don't, you lose the moral high ground. And if you lose the moral high ground, you lose the blessings granted by the author of liberty. It's very simple in its application, in its reality, if you stick to those principles. If you jettison them and you get into this, well, it's a relative discussion and I got to think through it from what I think is best at the time. And if you don't stick with those tried and true tested principles, you will fail the test.
And that's the whole problem we've got. Well, it's not the whole problem. It's one of the major problems we've got in this nation today is there is no moral compass that's being exercised. I mean, all of these, they banked and contained the flow of government within a canal or a channel, if you think about it. It's breached it a long time ago, and nobody is trying to repair it. And we have just abandoned that. And those that seek to govern today...
Yeah, there's few of us that are trying to repair it, right?
Well, there's... Okay, I'll agree. There are a few people, but those that hold a position of authority, they're almost non-existent. Those that govern are almost entirely not only unworthy to, but incapable of. They remind me of that Paris Commune that happened in 1871 after the communists took over in Paris. I mean, these people are incapable of governance.
And they are, and because they've lost the moral high ground. They've jettisoned the governing values and the hierarchy of moral imperative that I speak of. The siren songs of socialism is too great in their hearts and in their minds and in their souls. And that's why we need to make sure that they don't have power and replace them with people who do. And the second they start to run off the rails, we've got a republic. If we can jealously guard it and keep it, is the point. And a constitutional republic is based on God's laws, based on a proper role of the family. Families are the fundamental unit of society, okay? And our society will never be stronger than our focus on God and willingness to obey his commandments. And then the family, the organization God put on the earth to govern the affairs of men and protect one another. And society is merely a mirror of that reality check. And it can be good or evil based on how we sally forth. Either we stand with the laws of God or we sally forth into darkness, sir.
You know, this is so, I mean, there's so many paths we could follow on this, but I think back on the Illuminati's effort.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm incredible at triggering Dr. Bradley to, you know, I can send him 96 ways with a few comments because he's so educated and so researched into the history of what makes people and societies great and what can tear them down that it's hard for him to stick with a thought point. He's got so many points to make, and how do you make them all at once, Doctor?
Well, that's the thing, is that there's a repeating lesson here for us. And if you look at the Illuminati and the French Revolution, or you look at the Manifesto, Communist Manifesto, and you look what's happened in China, you look at Russia, the Bolsheviks, and everything, they have basically five tenets. And they're being carried out in America right now. The destruction of Christianity. We could talk at great length about the upcoming bill that will destroy your religious liberty. Private property is being abolished and destroyed. Eliminating the family as a social unit, and we could talk at length of the evidences of that. Their efforts were to abolish the existing governments, and that's exactly what's happening with our existing constitution. And you look about establishing the new dictatorship of the proletariat, the working class. This is really, they're calling it that, but the elites are going to be our lords and masters. It's an abominable situation we're in right now, and I hope America can get a critical mass of people that care.
And if you want to learn about the moral hierarchy, ladies and gentlemen, look to the Ten Commandments for your starting point. Turn to God in prayer. Go forward in faith after mighty prayer to Almighty God. Repent and obey his commandments, and he shall give you guidance. That's a promise. Not from me, it's a biblical promise from God Almighty himself. We promote God, family, and country on this radio program, ladies and gentlemen. I know sometimes it's pretty tough stuff. I get it. But it's because we love you, and it's because we want to preserve the greatest country on the face of the earth for generations to come. For Dr. Scott Bradley, his website, what is this, doctor?
FreedomsRisingSun.com.
There
no
you have it.
No spaces.
FreedomsRisingSun.com.